this podcast, I get really hands-on building a capacitor. Now, obviously, I can actually show you me building a capacitor, and you're probably not going to build a capacitor up at your end, but by listening to the podcast, you can build it in your head, and having built it in your head, you can see the value of building it and what you can learn from actually building it without actually going to the expense of getting the paper and silver foil and all that type of stuff to build a capacitor. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific, part of my general cardiac rehab of getting together different layers of cognitive togetherness, at different levels to just refresh the memory after several long anesthetics about what capacitors are and circuits are, just to, you know, you plumb your depth of your memory and you suddenly remember things and stuff like that. And they're also to get different skill levels going, just at communication, talking, technical skill levels, and then the higher level skill levels of the strategy of how you podcast and explain things in little bits, and give an explanation with the idea of exposing, linking with your memories, sort of real memory craft of not getting too many different examples together and then too many formulas at the start of it. But we're going to look at capacitors. Now, capacitors are part of the general, it's pantheon of basic electronic circuits, which then come together to make more complex things like computers and cars and washing machines. But coming back to it, we've got the basic battery, resistor, transistor, and capacitor. I refer those together because we'll be looking at them to make a fundamental circuit, which we'll assume that we've built, and we'll use it later on in this podcast. Just to get back and revise, a battery supplies a constant voltage between its terminals, so this supplies a charge. The mythical positive charge out of the positive terminal flows to the negative terminal, but in reality it's actually negative charge which flows from the negative terminal to the positive. However, due to convention, before we knew about electrons, we had circuits, and we laid a bet that positive charge, because plus is good, we've said we have conventional current. This is an important thing to understand. There's batteries. There's resistors, which are dissipators. You put electrical energy in, and less electrical energy is transferred after the resistor, and the resistor takes off some electrical energy, generally as heat energy. And to get into what actually happens into a resistor, we've got little measurements of the current and the voltage across a resistor to try and work out what's going on. The value of resistance, we're going to do formulas here, but only just cursory formulas. The value of resistance is defined as R, it's defined as V on I, not the differential resistance, which is another concept. That is important. You have negative resistance, but what they actually refer to is a region of a characteristic of derivative resistance. We just won't get into that, but strictly the ratio of the two. So it's the reading on your voltage or potential difference meter versus your current measure meter. That's the ratio of those two things. So if something's got a high resistance, you need a very high voltage to drive a 1 amp unit through. So in terms of resistance, the definition of resistance, resistance is the physical property of a resistor, which is made of material which has a resistivity. And this is important because we're going to discuss a low resistance capacitor going further down on it. The definition of a 10 ohm resistor is it takes 10 volts to get 1 amp through it. A 1192 ohm resistor takes a voltage of 1192 volts, potential difference across that resistor to get 1 amp at the other end. So that's the resistance ratio, is the another way of saying it is the voltage or the potential difference drop you need across the resistor to get 1 amp through it. We then have the capacitor, where we got you to make a basic flat film capacitor with a aluminium foil, piece of paper, aluminium foil, to get experience of the actual capacitor in operation. It involves the attraction of electrostatic charge, so you'll notice that it'll take some effort to remove the aluminium foil. Once this is charged up, we then got you to actually, now whether you did it or not, I'm saying this is mechanically made in your head. So in a textbook, this would be a diagram, but in a podcast, it's me describing you doing this activity. So we've got you to make a rolled film capacitor, similar to the roll that you see in those little cans, and you roll up two layers of aluminium foil and appropriate insulators between the two, and you roll up a 10 square meter capacitor to make a 2 microfarad capacitor at the end of it. And we give you the formula to work out. The capacitor is the amount of charge per voltage, so it's the amount of charge for 1 volt using it. So definitely there's the 1 unit on the base is what you say for the amount of what you get. So a capacitor is a charge storing device. It's an electrostatic battery. So some batteries store with chemical energy. A capacitor is a battery, an electrostatic battery, has the properties of not moving the atoms around, so therefore it's got a long lifetime, high discharge rate, but you're using ultimately the compression strength. It's a mechanical process inside there, so you're using a mechanical property of it. So there's a limit in terms of the voltage and how much power you can use it. So if we will just talk a little bit, the formula we've given you is that the capacity, the capacitance in farad equals the area of your electrodes divided by the distance times the permissivity of vacuum times another ratio factor. So vacuum permissivity is 8.18 in my head. I can't really remember the number, by 10 to the minus 12 or trillionth divided by a trillion. So that is something where you can imagine getting a reasonably big area and then getting a very small distance, as small as possible. And then this one kills it down, so your capacitors are very small. Until people figured out how to actually make supercapacitors that we described recently, which are becoming... the important thing is the cost per energy unit. So the cost per energy unit is really dropping, and naturally, as China has absolutely trumped the world producing solar panels can only be made in China at the moment. China is gearing up to make these very cheap superconductors, which just supercapacitors. So supercapacitors have enormous surface area by being very thin, either using a crinkly nanoparticle surface area, and they use a very thin, an atom thick conductor of graphene, and then they have double insulators on each side of the graphene, and so that creates a two interface capacitance stored on the graphene and on the interface, and the interface where they're stuck together has just basically an interatomic spacing, and then you can soup this up further with a sacrificial iron transfer, so you can dope this with lithium, and we're only at the dawn of the age of supercapacitors, as far as I can see, as far as I hope, as far as I know. I myself have used to be a technology skeptic. In the 80s, I thought it would be 2,000 years before we did the genome. Around the year 2000, I think, when we did it, just before they did it, I thought, not 2,000 years, probably 100 years, and we're really going fast. So with supercapacitors, if you had told me that there's such a thing as a 1 farad capacitor, I'd just laugh in your face. In fact, there was a joke at university. His head, the capacitance of his head is 1 farad. I think a 1 farad capacitor. I think that's probably the charge holding capacity of the Earth. It's, you know, it's a very large thing. We used to calculate capacitance of parallel plates and Earths and spheres. Almost anything, everything has a capacitance. In fact, capacitance is something which you can measure all around yourself. So we've actually pulled you into the modern technology. So what seems an inane thing to do, many people nowadays would argue that we don't have to teach circuits anymore because we're not teaching people how to till the soil, we're not teaching people how to compost and their basic things to care for themselves. And so since no one's ever going to come across a capacitor in their consumer life, it's something that you order in. I don't know, people don't do their own accounts anymore. They get accountants to go in. There's a whole argument against it. But again, the supercapacitor is something which is happening right here and now. It's watch this space as homes go on to being charged by supercapacitors, and they take their rightful place as a interim, a lead solution in electric vehicles and places where the energy source is just not smooth. You've got to say wind gusts, you've got all these things which are producing intermittent energy source, and so you want to actually store it there. And then again, we're still clearly understanding the economics of supercapacitors. And so they've got a fantastic power density. So the power density is measured in two things, which is power density per kilogram, which really matters if you're putting in a vehicle, or power density per litre, which means whether you're putting in a small house. You know, it's okay, but you want to have some living space. You don't want the entire house filled up with supercapacitors, but in general, the a supercapacitor which can actually power a house now is about the size of a suitcase. So that's a pretty amazing thing. That is power a house. That is take off the energy, surplus energy of your surplus solar cells and store it so you can go off grid. Very interesting development. But one of the things we want to do in this podcast, getting a long way, is to actually break down that idea of area and capacitor, and what does a capacitor of different things do. Now, there's the equation form of things, and you can it's equations are a very great thing. You can actually run it through, run a worksheet through, test it, test people know it, and actually tick it off. What we're talking about is another type of a deeper learning experience where we make up a capacitor and we measure a capacitance. Now, you can measure capacitance with a capacitance measuring multimeter. There are some multimeters where they just have capacitance and you just hook it up and it just reads the capacitance, and that's really not a very satisfying thing to do. You can measure a capacitance also by how much electricity it takes to charge in. So you have a resistor, which if I can say, ideally a transistor, which is a a constant current device, but a resistor will do for the start at starter, and it's the amount of time it takes to observe it going in. Now, this, unfortunately, you've got to gain cognitive load. People have to remember remember when something takes 30 seconds to get up to 1 on E. Well, it's 1 on 2.7 charge. That's the magical charging time. The RC is the charging. It's pretty amazing that RC, when you multiply the two together, I think they come out in units, in exact units of seconds. Isn't that fantastic? SI units. Those teaching techniques of teaching what capacitor is probably not as powerful about as with what I'm going to teach now. So for this, you need aluminium foil and a ream of paper. And you guessed it, you've got the first capacitor that you've made, which is aluminium foil, a sheet of paper, aluminium foil. And now let's bring it up. So the aluminium foil, the bottom, the odd layers, which goes first, third, fourth, first, third, fifth, and so on, stick a bit out over the left, but don't extend fully over the right. And similarly, the even papers, electrodes or plates, as we have it, stick over the right, but don't stick over the left. So the piece of paper does actually insulate and stop the two layers going up. And what you do is, at the term is called interdigitated plates. That is, on one hand, electrodes on one hand, and quite literally on the left hand. And if you hold your fingers out, I can't do this because I'm holding my VP10 podcasting microphone. Now you can, because you're not doing anything with your hands. Oh, I'm not going to ask anything about that. But you've got your so your left hand and your right hand, and you can get your little finger, little finger, ring finger goes between your little finger of your right hand, goes between the little finger and ring finger of your left hand, and so forth. It's interdigitated. And so you can actually build up a capacitor this way, step by step. In fact, you can build a capacitor and then you can take it apart. Now, there are actually capacitors called stacked film capacitors, which in general get used for a number of things. They're the ideal capacitors for satellites. I tend to put them up in satellites because one thing that happens, space is a pretty mean place, and cosmic radiation can come through. Your little aluminium's got nothing to do with it. When you've got a GEV cosmic ray coming through, it goes through, and cosmic rays cause big spark breakdown on Earth between the capacitance of the Earth. And when the big capacitor in the cloud breaks down, you get a lightning bolt, and that's dissipated by cosmic rays. So in general, if you have a capacitor and it breaks down enough, it becomes pretty rubbishy, unless you have these stacked film capacitors, which have this ability to, if they are short, they can burn their short out. They're called self-healing stacked film capacitors. This is what you're building here, an interdigitated 500 sheets of paper, and interdigitated paper. And of course, you have to connect all your odd electrodes together and all your even electrodes together and pull them off. So you'll need, say, bull clips, or sorry about the noise there, it's a garbage truck taking our garbage away late in the day. Okay, so you're taking these interdigitated capacitance, and you don't have to actually sit there for a long time and build a 500 shape. I'm just trying to think. I can't really do it off the top of my head, but I could. But this is, you can build more than enough capacitor to following experiment. What we're going to do is we're going to travel forward in time to our podcast, which is coming out in the future, about how to make a simple sound oscillator. A sound oscillator is made with two transistors, a PNP and your NPN, You don't really have to worry about your transistors. There's transistors that you can, the hobby transistor, which is sort of moderate power, cost about 3 cents. You'll pay more through the nose if you, depending how you order it. If you're at a school, just bulk order 1,000, and just and then share amongst your local schools. That's what I would order. I call these capacitors now, the cockroaches of capacitors. They're just sort of really uninteresting, but you can use these to make a tone generator, and the tone generator will produce a tone based on a factor R times C, so your resistor in there times your capacitance. So if you get a right, I see a small R. I just got to actually put that into my head. Yeah, I've got to see. I've got to really go. But essentially, the larger your capacitor, the lower the frequency. I'll have to go back and check that the formula in my head for the discharge time. I think it's C on R, because if so, if you've got a large capacitance and a low and a oh no. I just have to really think. So I've got a large capacitance, and oh yeah, I think it is RC. Sorry, guys. A large resistance means and a large capacitance. So you've got a large bucket and a small flow of charge into it. A small flow of charge is between resistance. You can see that working in my head. And look, if your students do this, they'll be able to do exactly the same as me. I'm not that smart. I've got no friends, and therefore sit there and actually, when everyone else has gone off, and I sit there and actually just work out how things work. Now, so your circuit is RC, so for the frequency, yeah, that's right. The frequency will. What's the period? I'm just trying to think. Yeah, the period will increase as R times C. So if you increase R or increase capacity, the period, so the frequency is 1 on RC. There we go. Look, the important thing is that there is a factor in there. It depends on how your actual transistors are biased. So if it just has to discharge a long time before they flip over and switch off the current, you'll get a. You'll be get close to the R. Depends. There's a factor associated there about how you actually build the individual circuit. But for an individual circuit, you have this thing of a tone generator, which can actually generate a sound, a tone, depending on the capacitance. So, if you double your capacitance, you will halve your tone. So. I think this is to do with octaves. You can actually double it and drop it down an octave. It's a doubling. It's a logarithmic scale then. And then, how do you actually tell tones? You can use a electronics, but that sort of will overload people. The best way to measure a tone is to get a tuning fork on a resonant cavity, hit it, and actually measure the tone. Compare the tone with your own frequency sensors, which are your ears. And as you get right onto a tone, you'll hear that. As you get close, you'll hear the tones begin to beat and pulse and interfere with each other from your frequency generator and your tone generator. There's a whole heap of science to get out there. So this is building. So you're building a capacitor. This is where you can vary your capacitor. Okay, you can vary your capacitor in a very strong way by varying the area of your capacitor. So if you build with 60 sheets, you'll get a capacitor. If you add another 60 sheets onto it, build it carefully with 60 sheets onto it, you'll get doubling of the recharge time, the discharge time of that capacitor. It'll be able to store more electricity with bled through that resistor. And in this, where the you go that into a tone generator, you'll be able to hear a different tone. So, for instance, if you have 30 sheets and you get one tone, you can halve the frequency of the tone by listening to it. Or if you have 30 and 30 and you connect one, then after one, then the other in series, you then reduce the total amount of charge to charge up your capacitor. So stacking them is putting them in parallel. If you put them in series, you'll double your frequency. And so this frequency and the ability to measure frequency with a tone source and listen to the beats is a very hands-on practical way of doing it, but you have to tunnel into the future to build one of these tone generators. I'm sure that you'll be able to think of another of other ways of doing it. This is just the most practical, earthy, hands-on way of doing it. Of course, you don't have to actually do any of this. You can actually, if you're out in podcast land, you're not teaching or anything like, you don't have a class, you don't have to actually think of doing this. You can just imagine all the little bits and pieces, or imagine building a capacitor, imagine measuring it, imagine being stuck with the area and distance formula. Now, the supercapacitors still do this, however, they're very clever in being that the area of what looks like a square meter of plate is in fact 100 square meters of plate, because it's the actual surface area when you go down is really corrugated. It's like looking at a corrugated roof. It's a corrugated panel will cover roughly a meter. I've got a old Aussie corrugated iron roof for my my house, which was built in the 30s, a little bank house, and it's been expanded ever since, but it's still got the 1930s corrugated iron roof up the top of it. So that that corrugation, for instance, is a certain area, but if you were to flatten out, it would go to a much, much larger area. Sort of similar principle is your lungs. Your lungs are obviously can fit in two basically shopping bags, and cut your lungs out and carry it around in a shopping bag. However, the surface area is the size of a tennis court by the time you spread it out. So this surface area trick is used all the time, and inside your supercapacitors, this just basically, if you look at the knowledge and you look at different routes, your formula book knowledge of it without doing experiments is a very quick, efficient route, especially if you have to get there on time. It means that you're going to lose a certain fraction of people. If you've got the time, this one will pick up yet another fraction of people, but it's got an added benefit that once they get their hands on, they can think of other innovative things to develop and do with it, particularly if two students are producing the same capacitor, that they can actually compare their capacitors by listening, having a tone-off process. And really all this is very, very cheap. The transistors and resistors, at least bought in bulk, really are under $1 per unit, easily under $1 per unit. To get in a very educational overall, this is Peter Hill Explains, trying to discuss or talk through a development in teaching in Australia. We don't teach capacitors to our kids, so hopefully this idea won't die as it will over here. That's taken up by some overseas countries, particularly who don't have the full high-end resources that we have in Australia, like the computer labs and stuff like that, they have, say, maybe less resourced, you can actually do a lot more with a lot less if you try to do it. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on doing, thinking, and teaching science.